Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, iconic R&B crooner Keith Washington is here to chat about appearing on this weekend's edition of Unsung. Directors Daniel Lindsay and TJ Martin are here to talk about their HBO documentary, Tina, about the life and music of rock legend Tina Turner. And closing out the show is Tommy Miles, host of OWN's hit series, Ready to Love. He's here to chat about the new season and much more. I'll also be playing throwback sounds from Keith Washington, Tina Turner, the Isley Brothers, plus Earth, Wind, and Fire. But first, here's an important message from the High Museum of Art.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting an exhibition of the life and legacy of Georgia native David Driscoll now through May 9th, 2021. The exhibition showcases Driscoll's painting and printmaking practices and 60 works of art spanning 7 decades of his career as an artist, curator, and scholar. Time tickets are required. More information is available at high.org.
Turn the lights down low. So damn romantic. One more can.
This is Lisa Arendell, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
You just heard a classic tune from the original soundtrack for the 90s film Boomerang, featuring acclaimed singer-songwriter Keith Washington. The Grammy-nominated R&B crooner is the subject of a new episode of TV1's award-winning series, Unsung. The one-hour program chronicles the meteoric rise of musical talents from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and the tragedies and triumphs many of them endured throughout their careers. Keith Washington was excited to be part of this new season and explained how he is using his episode as a vehicle to promote his forthcoming album.
I always liked Unsung. I understood the concept, to be honest. I understood what they were doing, but I also felt that Unsung could be an outlet for talent that is not really going away. You know what I mean? That's trying to work. I think Unsung has given us a platform, despite the fact if you're not singing no more, you have a story, you know. Unsung will find that and make it happen for you and get you exposure. In my case, at this particular time, before doing Unsung, we was finishing the record. You know what I mean? I was touring a lot before this pandemic came. So we were reestablishing and rebuilding Keith Washington. So when the opportunity of Unsung came, that was another vehicle, you know? That was another vehicle for me to be exposed to the world, for me to let the world know that, no, I am in fit condition. You know what I mean? I do take pride in a lot of things that works my body, from training to working out to singing every day to working on the record. And last song gave me an opportunity to let the world know that, hello, I'm still here. I'm still here. So people say Unsung, I'm not doing Unsung because it's like I'm not over my career. I don't look at Unsung like that. I look at Unsung giving the opportunity for those that need a platform to be seen, to be heard, to tell your story. I mean, and it opens up a lot because truthfully, I know a lot of artists that was not active until they did Unsung. So Unsung, I chose to do Unsung because of the fact that I thought it would be another notch in my belt to pursue success and help me get to where I'm going. So the viewers also can understand who I am as a man, my passion to help what you heard. Give me a mic, a camera, and let me express who in the hell I am, and don't get it twisted.
That's all I seem to do.
So can we talk about Kissing You? Because that was a song you had actually written for Anita Baker, correct?
Yeah, that was my intention. Yeah, my intent to give it to Anita. I've known Anita from being, both of us living in Detroit, and one of my cousins used to be in the group Chapter 8. And so she and I met, and surprisingly, she never knew I was writing that song for her. But because I wrote songs for Freddie Jackson, I wrote Hey Lover for Freddie, and all this took place in Charlotte. You know, nothing to do in Charlotte but to write, you know? And so my intent was to write a song for Anita. So I wrote it to Anita with the intentions of delivering it to her. You know what I mean? Because I love writing, and I just felt that, you know, she could deliver the song. You know, she didn't even know I was writing the song, you know? And she and I had a conversation once before, and because we wind up represented by the same manager later on in my, well, the beginning of my career, I should say. And I told her about it. She's like, oh, that was so beautiful. Well, you know how she talks, right? But yeah, my intention was to write that and give it to her, and because I didn't see myself doing it. I really didn't. I love the song, but I didn't want nobody to hear that song with me doing it, to be honest. You know, I had other songs that I thought that was, I wouldn't say so much better than that song, but I would say that was not where I wanted to go coming out. But you know, hey man, it turned out to be the song in the direction I needed to go in, you know? Not saying I wanted to be a hippie or a rock and roll guy, but I had another song that I had in mind that would probably jump my career. But unfortunately, you know, that song, you know, it was on the album, but it wasn't the one that started my career.
I'm coming home early today. I've been going crazy. No, I just can't wait. I'm going to love you till you cannot take no more. Tonight I'm yours. And I'm
I got to say, my all-time favorite is Make Time for Love.
Yeah, that's one of mine, too. That's a crazy story behind that song, man. I don't know if you want to hear this story, but Make Time for Love was a song that wasn't written for me. It wasn't. The producer, John Lowesby and Terry Coffey, they wrote a lot of great songs. They also did the commercial Always Coca-Cola. They wrote and produced that. They wrote a lot of stuff for a lot of other artists, and this particular song was recorded for an artist. And they asked me to do the demo. Now, mind you, at this particular time, we was in gear. I think I was signed to Elektra, starting the record, okay? Although the album didn't come out on Elektra, it came out on Quest Warner Brothers. But they called me and said, man, we got the song we need for you to do the vocal for this individual, man, to show him where we need to go with it. Well, when I heard the song, yeah, the vocal you hear on that record was the actual vocal we recorded for this person. I mean, that was the first take vocal. You know, I learned the song. I went in there. There was a few little spots we fixed, but everything was the demo vocal. And this particular person, and I claimed that song. I fell in love with that song while I did it, so I put my heart and soul in it. And I said, whoever's about to do the song, I'm gonna give them a run for their money because I want this song. And at the time, we finished starting to record my album. And it wind up being my song. You know, the person, it just wind up being my song. You know, I understand that the person heard it and liked it, said, wow, basically, I mean, he's killing this song. I mean, basically, and the person I'm talking about is damn good vocalist. Damn good vocalist. I'm a fan of his and also a close personal friend of his as well. But it was like, you know, I put my mark on that song because I wanted it, man. I wanted it bad, and it wound up being my song. So I feel you. That's one of my favorites, too.
And I honestly can't imagine.
And don't ask me who the artist was.
I know who the artist is. I got a chance to see the show. So I know who the artist is. I'm not going to let the audience in because they got to watch the show. But I can say this, and I've seen him perform as well. I cannot imagine him singing this song. Nobody but you.
Well, he wanted to change it after I heard it. I understand he wanted to change the rewrite it, you know, and the producers was not happening.
My last question is, you know, you had, you know, the pleasure of being on stage. You've done television. Are we going to see you coming back and doing more television or some possible films? Because there's a lot of biopics out there, a lot of musical projects going on. So are we going to see you back in the acting chair?
You know, I would love to do that. Families of mine is actors and stuff, and we talk about it. And I would love to do it, and they very much encouraging me too. I don't shut a door on anything. I am a body of whatever you deliver that fits the core of who I am, I'm in it. You know, yes, people often talk about me acting, and yes, you will see me doing a lot of acting because that's something that I always liked to do from General Hospital for the things that I've done. I was told in that. My passion for people's emotion and what they've done and their body of work have allowed me to take the back seat and give them the shine. In other words, great example, when I did Port of Jesses, I've never been to a casting call. Never. You're talking about a guy that just had great records. And now they flipped me on to do a movie John did. And when I went there, I saw Jesse the Young and the Restless. I'm seeing all these great actors, and I'm seeing them with the same character that I'm going, that I'm signed, you know what I mean? And I didn't understand the business then, that if I got hurt, they still need to find somebody, you know what I mean? Or whatever the case that may be. But I always thought that they've been working hard at what they did and what, you know what I mean? And it's, yes, it comes with the business. Yes, we want him because he got a billion fans, or whatever the case may be. But to answer your question, you will see me doing more because it's in my blood and I want to do more. But at that time, I slowed up because of the compassion that I have for other artists, man, that's been acting for 100 years and got the experience. But my mother told me one day, I said, Mom, they want to give me this film, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know, because there's so many people that work so hard at it. My mother said, why not you? Why not you, Keith? You work just as hard. So I take that and I live by that. You know, why not me? You know, so there's no more having compassion yet. I do. It's just who I am when it comes to somebody in the race with me. I want to win just like they do.
Catch Keith Washington tomorrow night on TV1's Unsung at 9 p.m.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021, in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at lifeluxjazz.com.
Davis here. You're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius. Take it away, Ray!
You just heard music legend Tina Turner performing her Grammy-winning anthem, What's Love Got to Do With It? The beloved rock icon is the subject of a new HBO documentary titled Tina, which chronicles her tumultuous relationship with her husband and singing partner, Ike Turner, as well as her triumphant solo career as the newly crowned Queen of Rock and Roll. I caught up with the film's directors, Daniel Lindsay and TJ Martin, during a recent AFCA roundtable where they discussed how they had to encourage her to tell this story through her point of view.
I definitely don't think she was like, it's not like we signed on to the project. She was like, okay, guys, let's do this. Like she took some convincing. I think if at the beginning, if we, you know, had said, oh, we'll just do this with Archive, and she would have been very happy not to, to do the interview. But no, it was important to us, I think, from the outset that we hear this from her point of view. This might be a weird way to answer this question, but TJ and I just, as filmmakers, don't come to documentaries. There's almost kind of in the documentary world, there's like a journalism kind of path, and there's like a kind of cinematic path, I guess. And we definitely come more from the latter. And like, how do we take nonfiction but make it like, yeah, filmic or cinematic? And so part of that, I think, is like finding our character and whose point of view we're telling the story through. And we knew that was going to be Tina. And we knew that was also what the documentary form offered that all other forms of telling her story don't, right? Is that it's actually her voice. You know, as amazing as Angela Bassett is or Adrienne Warren is playing Tina, it's just can't ever beat Tina. And so to have her and have her around and have her be able to reflect on this unbelievable career she had, but also give us just the intimate insight into what the experience of life has been like for her. That was just something we knew from the beginning that we would want to do. And then, you know, I think she understood by signing on to it that would be so if we wanted to do the interview, she was going to have to do it. But it was as we did one interview and then filmed a bit, you know, she invited us, she wanted us to come film at the house, which was something we wanted to do anyway. So that was great. And then that kind of led to more filming and some little additional interviews along the way. Important to us. I don't think that's the TLDR or whatever of it is like important to us. I don't know how important it was to Tina at the outset, but.
I think once we understood, you know, it was in early conversations with Tina that we realized that the pain of her past was kind of just bubbling underneath the surface. It was always kind of lurking around the corner. And that was a revelation for us, because the association with Tina is, she endured some traumatic moments in her life. She endured abuse, and she made a couple of heroic decisions, and she overcame that. And that's the end of the narrative. And you know, this for us, the revelation that as Erwin points out in the film, this notion, it's like a soldier coming back from war. It's PTSD. It's she makes a decision to survive every day. Once we couldn't shake that, once we kind of understood that is the life that Tina at 80 years old is living and experiencing. So that really informed the POV of the film. And to answer your question, it doesn't work without Tina's voice. If Tina, current day Tina, is not in that film, you don't get the opportunity to actually tell the story of Tina Turner and be an honest, authentic conduit of her own POV on her own narrative. So we were really fortunate that, you know, a lot of these kind of, I don't know, what do you call them? Like pop culture kind of docs. Usually you have a limited window with X said celebrity. We were really fortunate that once, you know, we did a couple of long interviews with her, but we were able to build a good rapport with her, and she understood what we were doing and was on board. And so she gave us, you know, a little bit more and more time with her so that we could really flesh that storyline out.
Watch Tina, the documentary on HBO.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, this is Ian LaVanzan, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment features the outrageously funny Tommy Miles. The comedian and media personality is back as host of OWN's hit dating series, Ready to Love. And we caught up with him this week to chat about the new season and much more.
Tommy Miles, welcome to Upfront. So good to see you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I was super excited when they reached out and said, listen, we got Tommy. And I was like, I got some questions.
I bet you do.
I've been a fan of the show for the last three seasons. I mean, my sister and I, when I tell you, we were glued to last season. And it's crazy because I was like, we would do our own sort of post-show breakdowns of what was really going on.
let me tell you something. That resort was something else. You hear me? It was a lot. And for me to find out later that one of my contestants was pregnant the whole time, I was like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? Yes. You didn't know that, huh, Ray? Yes.
No. Who was pregnant?
You gotta go back and watch the reunion. And that's where it all comes out.
So we watched it. My sister and I, we watched it. Okay, I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay.
Woo.
Wow.
But she was not, it's not like she was pregnant at the reunion. You were pregnant the whole time at the resort. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I was like, it's a whole different look of you looking for a baby dad. Are you really looking for another baby dad? You didn't even had the baby yet. Bananas.
So let's talk about, so you guys are back for another season in Houston, Texas, right, your hometown. What has that experience been like? Because the first two seasons were here in Atlanta. So what has that transition been like going from A-Town to H-Town?
Oh, my God. You know, Houston's the fourth largest city, man, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like a big town in opposed to a big city. And I was, you know, I'm biased. This is my hometown, born and raised. So I really felt good about being able to show off my city, and give some black-owned businesses a good look. And so it feels good. And I think people who have never come to Houston, I've got a lot of friends that are in the country and out of the country that haven't, you know, frequented Houston yet. And like, you know, they get a glimpse at it and get to see what I'm always bragging about. And, you know, Houston is known to be friendly people. That's who we are. And I think you guys, the viewers, will be able to see what type of black community we have here in this city, man. So it looks good. And the people on the show, oh, my God, the women, these are some, we got a lot of boss ladies on this show. So, you know, it's, you know, they're entrepreneurs, got their own business, they're lawyers, you know, the list goes on and on. So it makes the men have to elevate their game, because when you come over here with this boss lady, you better know what you're doing.
And it looks like, because, you know, I did watch the very first show for this new season where you all introduce the contestants. There right. seems to be, versus the first, the other seasons, there seems to be a little bit more of an older group this time. Is that correct?
A little bit older. We still have a few that are in their 30s, 40s, you know, but it's that maturity is there. That no nonsense is definitely there. And you're gonna get a couple drops of that where, you know, these ladies are like, hey, I'm not with all that, okay? But these men, I got to give them their credit. They really, the majority, let me say that, the majority really are trying to find someone. And you get to see men in a different light, black men who opening up and being vulnerable and just sharing some past experience. And you get to, I mean, there's some tear-jerking moments in the lounge with me and these guys that it's just organic. It just happens. And I can't wait for the viewers to see it.
And I have to ask, what is the selection process? Because each season, the contestants get more and more interesting. Another point that I picked up was that some of these men have children. And I think that's really important, because in a perfect world, everybody, you know, will be single and no kids. But that's not the world that we live in. So you have individuals Exactly. that are good people, but they also have children as well. So how are you guys selecting your candidates?
You know what? I think we look at all walks of life so that it does mirror an image of what we actually go through in life. You know what I mean? So like one contestant is this brother has a set of twins. Wife is deceased and he is raising his kids on his own. So it is important for someone like that to make sure whoever he brings into his life are ready for this type of situation. You have a ready-made family when you come to this with this man. So you got to think about it. She may be bringing two or three kids herself. So now you got this blended family that's going on, and it's a good look. I like it. I like the fact that, because this is the way life is. You got a few kids. I got a couple kids. Hey, let's see if we can work it out and make it happen. And that's the way love works sometimes. Love comes sometimes when it comes. It has some things that comes along with it. So you got to be ready to take it.
We also got to see you interact with your wife. What was that like? How did you guys enjoy
that was a bit different. You know, I was nervous for her and I wanted her to be able to do a good job, you know, and she was excited. And I think she was nervous. So I was trying to be as playful as possible just so she can feel my man got me. And if I make a mistake, don't worry about it. I'm not the host of the show. No way. That's his job. So it was just to have some fun. Come on and sit with me and watch these contestants who we're going to have on the show. So to be working together like that, I think it was cool, you know, but really in all actuality, my wife is super wife and super mom. That's her thing. And I'm happy for that. I'm glad that she is who she is around this house, because I can't do all that she does. I'd rather do this than be to do that job she got. No, 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 no. Oh, no, no, no. I can't help you with your homework. I can't.
You mentioned the times that you're able to interact with the male contestants. And I got to say, last season, I think, was the realest we've ever seen on the show. I can only imagine, now that we've got a new crop of guys, how real it gets in those times. And let's talk about that, because I think that's so important that we see on television other Black men talking to other Black men about relationships and love.
You know what? It's really important. It's a lot of, it's most of the time we don't do that. We as Black men, we wear this shield, this armor, this protector. And one thing we don't let out is our feelings and how, opening up our hearts. We don't do that often. So to see that, to see Black men doing it, I think it is just a plus for our community. It helps, it helps show really who we really are, that we are people too. And I think, we as Black men are looked at as we're strong and we're this and we're that, and we are, but we are teddy bears when you open us up and you get to see, I got 10 teddy bears that you got to see them just unravel and you get to see who they are. But it's so important, man. And it's so important, even the younger generation, people in their 20s that are watching, young guys who are in their 20s that are watching the show, you get to see that's what grown men do. Grown men cry. Grown men open up. Grown men share their hearts. You just don't see it out in the streets and doing the hustle and bustle of everyday life. But on this show, you get to see it.
What have you enjoyed the most about serving as the host and moderator? Because you've been doing this now for a couple of seasons. You found your groove, because I know sometimes that can be hard when you're dealing with people that you've never met before. But you've been doing this for quite some time now. So what do you enjoy the most?
What I like? Being able to just share my past experience. This June will be 20 years of being married to my wife. So, I got a lot of experience, good and bad. So my parents were married until my father passed away. So I know nothing else but to make a relationship work. There is no leaving. There are no other options. Me and my wife always say the book says till death do us part, which means if you want to leave, then your ass got to lay it down. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know anything else. But I'm able to give them that experience. And when you go into this relationship, don't go in it where if this don't work and we got it, this has to happen and this has, no, you got to go in it, be open and to the point where, you know what, I'm going to make this work. We are going to do everything in our efforts to make this work. And that's what I like, is being able to instill in them, don't do this for a season. Be ready for the long haul. Be ready for the journey. Even when this 10-week journey is over, if two of my contestants have connected, I let them know. Now the cameras are gone. All the fame and all of that is out. Now it's on y'all to keep putting this work in. And you got to keep pushing with it. And if you don't, it's going to fall. It's going to crumble. So you met with the lights and cameras. Now it's time for you all to take the ropes and ride it out.
Catch Tommy Miles and Ready to Love Fridays at 9 p.m. on OWN. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Keith Washington, Daniel Lindsay, TJ Martin, and Tommy Miles. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University. We'll be right back.